Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Dark money, dirty money, you know, this whole world of donors and you don't know who they are or why they're supporting something, that's very personal to us because those are the same powers that are behind pushing the voucher program in Arizona. And we just thought that we could help out that effort.
Well, I don't support tax increases. I think the government should find a way to live within its means. If you look at what we're doing right in this plan, we're able to put a $1 billion additional dollars over the next several years because we have had a growing state. Our economy is growing. We're one of the finest places in the nation in which to live.
Oh, that's good news. Obviously, there was hope that this would happen. It was been hinted that it was happening, and I'm glad it has. I'm glad they're in the air on the way home. That's a good thing.
We're striking that balance to hopefully equal out at the end of the day that baseball continues in Maricopa County, not just through the next 5 years at Chase Field, not just through 2027, but well beyond.
And with us to talk about so-called ballot harvesting in Arizona and the possibility of the Diamondbacks leaving Phoenix and other items are former Tempe Mayor Hugh Hallman and the former chair of the Arizona Democratic Party, Andre Cherney. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Hugh, I'm going to start with you on the broader education question. In the montage that we heard from Don Penich Thacker of Save Our Schools, which had a huge impact, Red for Ed movement was involved in this as well. How do you see the Save Our Schools effort, the support as far as getting petition signatures for the Outlaw Dirty Money initiative and other broader aspects of education affecting Arizona coming up?
I think as the sound clip demonstrated, it's a sensible fit. But the Save Our Schools folks demonstrated that real folks can get out on the streets, collect signatures, and get something on the ballot. In this instance, I think what's going to continue motivating that, and that's the Soak the Rich tax as well that's being circulated at the same time, that is going to impact a huge change in this state potentially. I thought the Republicans mishandled the entire education funding discussion entirely from the get-go. The grave concern over being associated with increasing taxes of any kind, I think, is potentially ironically going to be a problem for Republicans anyway with the Soak the Rich tax that's being pushed around by the same education folks. Had the Republicans come back in with a counter proposal with the sales tax increase, 0.9 to match the 301.6 for those of you who are wonks,
sales tax.
To get 1.5, you'd have $1.2 billion for education funding. What I'm puzzled by is that the governor and the legislature could scrape together $400 million from the current budget out of current spending. If that money could so easily be moved, why is it in the budget in the first place would be one question. The other is, had they moved to a sales tax base, you had Democrats originally supporting that kind of an effort, you might have actually gotten a bipartisan support for something on the ballot to fund education. And then if the Republicans wanted to come back and peel back some expenditures in the budget, they could.
And Andre, Soak the Rich obviously is Hugh's phrase on that. Do you think that the Democrats in this particular situation are taking the right tactic? Are they taking the Red for Ed movement, Save Our Schools, a little bit too seriously? Is there a risk in this that some people are going to see this as class warfare?
I don't think so. I think when you look at what's happened in this state and this country over the past couple decades, and you see where the economic growth has been, a tax that falls primarily on the middle and working class in this state is going to be counterproductive. Those are the people you want being able to spend money and put money back into the economy. That creates jobs. And so we don't want a job-killing tax. We want a kind of tax and a kind of budget that is actually going to help us create more jobs, and that means funding education. And I think Hugh is absolutely right. You know, where does something like that $400 million comes from? We know what the answer is. So much of the budget today is a slush fund, and is a slush fund for very powerful interests who have an enormous outsized impact and say in what happens in our state legislature. And that's why this Red for Ed movement and the other education activists are absolutely right to connect the dots between what they stand for and the need to fund public schools and outlawing dirty money.
Hugh, do you think the fact that Save Our Schools is getting behind the Outlaw Dirty Money campaign, does that help that initiative get on the ballot? Does it help it succeed if it makes the ballot, do you think?
I think if it makes the ballot, it succeeds. The issue is there are a lot of signatures to collect. I think the Save Our Schools and other Red for Ed folks now moving that petition around along with the petition. And by the way, soak the rich is, I think, good politics. I think the left will use that phrase. The business community has to come back and say, no, 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 this is job-killing kinds of stuff. But the fact that using that class warfare, that 1% of the taxpayers in the state are going to pay that, is actually brilliant politics. But in terms of collecting the signatures, I think that's the only way that the dark money folks get their signatures collected. There is not enough gas in the tank and not enough bodies out on the street. Nobody wants to fund the dark money folks, in part because my good friend Terry Goddard has been a loser in the past, and he's having trouble convincing folks that this can happen this time. Getting the teachers on the ground to be collecting those signatures along with the tax increase piece is, I think, brilliant politics. And both of them, I think, end up on the ballot, and Republicans end up very, very sorry they didn't solve both problems during the legislative session.
Look, I'd say Terry Goddard maybe lost at some campaigns, but it has been a winner in the sense of being one of the foremost public servants in this state's history and providing enormously valuable service here again. But this is not about Terry Goddard, and it's not about Democrats, and it's not about Republicans. This is really a citizens' movement, and you have people like Terry Goddard and Hugh Hullman and a lot of other folks coming together across party lines because this is about what kind of state we want to live in. And Mark, your question is exactly right. The reason that these education activists jumping in to the Outlaw Dirty Money campaign is so important is because they are understanding that what they care about is connected to this issue as well. Outlawing dirty money can seem like an abstract campaign finance issue. It's not. If you care about education, if you care about the environment, if you care about jobs, whatever issue you care about, we need a state where we're going to have elections that are going to be open and democratic and transparent. And there's powerful interests, let me be honest, on both sides of the aisle that don't want this to happen because they like a system where they can put money into campaigns and they that system works great for them. But
the consolidation of power to a handful of people on both sides is frightening. And as a conservative, exactly right.
And
as conservative a voice as Justice Scalia saying as part of the Citizens United that he understood and anticipated that transparency would be part of that issue. And the fact that we haven't solved that because we have a Congress that's now tangled up in the same issue. So it's a one sentence fix.
They are all bought and paid for.
Exactly.
And that's why I think they are going to gather the signatures. And what we see right now is actually truly inspiring as the Red for Ed movement was. You are seeing every single weekend citizens, Democrats, independents, Republicans out there gathering signatures, people going to outlawdirtymoney.org online, signing up to volunteer. And it's actually creating one of the largest citizen armies ever in the state history. It's going to be a really powerful force.
Well, Andre, you mentioned that this is sort of a citizen's drive. And I think one of the things that struck a lot of people about the Save Our Schools movement was what they did, mostly volunteers, collected a lot of signatures in not a lot of time. I'm wondering, you know, we talked about their impact, that group's impact potentially on the Outlaw Dirty Money campaign. Is this kind of a new movement? Is this a group that political campaigns or candidates might look for their support going forward? Like, look, we have this grassroots group of, you know, teachers and parents and students and people who care about public education. Is this a group that at some point could really be a group to be reckoned with in this state?
I think it could. I think it's so much is going to depend on the leaders and people actually staying with it. But look, you saw what happened with the Tea Party in the Republican Party, and citizens stepped up and transformed that party fundamentally, and we now have its ultimate outcome in sitting in the White House. I think you're going to see a similar kind of thing happen within, again, not just the Democratic Party, but across the political system of people who have not been political in the past, who are parents, who are teachers, who are small business owners, saying, I want to live in a state that actually cares about education, and I want my kids growing up in that state, and I've had enough. And that's what this is all about.
But Andre's point is, I think, the one to be taken carefully, and that is the Tea Party started as a focused, fiscally conservative group of people trying to balance budgets and cut taxes. And here we are. I don't think the original Tea Party mission is now represented by Donald Trump. In fact, with $20 trillion in debt lined up, I don't think anything that the original founders of the Tea Party movement thought would get done got done. And my fear for the Red for Ed folks is you've already seen the pushing and pulling of their mission being moved to one side or another, and that fractioning will, I think, occur, sadly. I do believe that there are consistent reasons for the education folks to be supporting the dark money effort, for the same reason that there are consistent reasons for folks on the right to be doing the same thing. And that's not to say that everybody in the Red for Ed movement is on the left. In fact, they're not. A huge number of teachers come from a Republican side of things, including me. But the reality is that I think it will be very hard for that group to hang together and cross over into issues that aren't immediately related to their original mission.
Gentlemen, last question before the break. Andre, let's boil it down in terms of potential. We're not taking out the crystal ball or anything, but based on Mark's question in terms of how important Save Our Schools is as a grassroots movement, does it lead to numbers? Does it lead to a change in the legislature? Could the Democrats take over the Senate side? Do you see Governor Ducey having much more of a fight than he would have otherwise had?
I think absolutely right. The 2010 example of the Tea Party is a little bit instructive. You saw in 2010 a huge shift nationally. Barack Obama's first midterm, Republicans were ascendant. And here in Arizona, we had SB 1070 as a state issue that poured gasoline on that and took it even farther in a different direction. I think we're going to see the same thing. This is already going to be a very strong year for Democrats all across America. And here in Arizona and a couple other places, that Red for Ed movement is going to join forces with them and say, okay, if you care about education, this is all the more important. And I think it's going to have an enormous impact in November.
And Hugh, what does it change if Governor Ducey wins re-election, but the Senate does flip to Democrats and the House gets quite close? Does that mean he's actually going to have to work with people?
I think, in fact, it means that he's got a better option to make his way to the White House, which is, I think, his ultimate goal, because then he can be against a bunch of stuff. And that makes it a lot easier to make those kinds of ways in politics. So I don't think the governor has to be concerned about whether he keeps a legislature for the next 2 years, because that's frankly what that timeline would look like. And instead, it may be a great advantage to him. I do think it is quite possible that there will be several House seats and Senate seats that are lost to the Republicans, precisely because there are a number of marginal districts. LD18 is an example of that. I'm from Central Tempe. It used to be a safe Republican stronghold, and now the LD26, which is the central part of Tempe, is liberal Democrat in the legislature, and LD18 to the south, which is South Tempe and North Chandler, has moved with two Ds representing it. This was a Chamber of Commerce Central, and now they can only marshal one Republican, and that person is likely going to have a fierce fight to hang on.
That's Hugh Holman. Also here is Andre Cherney. I'm Steve Goldstein with Mark Brody. We're in the midst of the Friday newscap here on the show, and our conversation continues after this. Good morning. It's the show on 91.5 KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix with Mark Brody. We're in the midst of our Friday newscap with former Tempe Mayor Hugh Holman and former chair of the Arizona Democratic Party, Andre Cherney.
Andre, let me start with you on this. A court ruled this week not striking down what has been called the ballot harvesting law. Basically, that makes it illegal for non-family members or non-caregivers to collect ballots, absentee or early ballots, and return them for people. This was seen as a loss for Democrats because a lot of groups that are aligned with the Democratic Party are often going around and collecting large numbers of ballots, dropping them off at polling places. Is this a loss for Democrats, do you think?
Yes, but more importantly, it's a loss for democracy. Democrats, our party, what we should care about is our democracy. And it was interesting to see what the judge actually said in that ruling. The judge said, Judge Reyes, not going to strike it down on constitutional grounds because the link between the legislature's action and protected classes, racial and so on, was not tight enough. But the judge's opinion was very clear. This is being done to give one political party an advantage over another political party. And that isn't good protected by the Constitution. You're allowed to do that, but that's not the right thing to do. And when you have a political party who says that my way of winning is going to be to make it harder for other people to vote and exercise their own franchise, which is what the Republican Party in this state is saying, that's deeply disturbing.
Well, I think the argument is correct that one would want more people to be able to vote than not, but we've made voting a fairly simple thing. The issue is, can you get your ballot into the mailbox, most of which are outside your door? It is true this about politics. Democrats have successfully used ballot harvesting because they have more ground troops. Getting the firefighters out to collect ballots in Tempe, the impoverished Tempe community that could not get ballots to their mailbox, and having those folks go in their T-shirts. They can't be Tempe firefighters, obviously, so City of Phoenix firefighters with their T-shirts saying, "I'm a firefighter," knocking on a door. "Hello, I'm here to help you get your ballot into the mailbox. You're in a double D household, and oh, by the way, Mark Mitchell is a lovely fellow." Now, he is a nice fellow, but in the race between Mark Mitchell and Michael Monte for mayor, it wasn't a bunch of impoverished folks who couldn't figure out how to vote. It was a very well-manipulated system in which 1,600 ballots got picked up, and Michael Monte lost by 135 votes. That's an issue. Now, is that a good politics? Yes. Do I think that's the problem? No. My concern with it is there is the possibility that folks say, "Oh, I'm sorry, you voted for the wrong guy." It's not that you changed the ballot. It's that one never makes it into the ballot box.
And is there evidence of this, though, Hugh?
There are certainly concerns, and I'm not a guy who's Hugh, I think you would agree.
You're
I'm
a
not
data
right-wing
guy.
That's
you're
correct.
A data guy, and you have to acknowledge there's been no examples documented of that actually happening.
And that's exactly why the judge ruled against the Democratic Party. There are not examples of this being used to disenfranchise minority voters. And so if you're going to be a data guy, live by that one. But in this instance, you're not going to get data. That's the problem. Because the person who did not get their ballot from their table in their living room to their mailbox is not going to follow up to make sure that that lovely person took their ballot to the ballot box. That's the issue.
But certainly there would be some examples of that if that was actually happening.
How easy do we have to make it to vote for people who are that low interest in voting?
As easy as possible.
As easy as possible to get low information voters.
United States citizens voting should be our goal. And if those people, those 1,600 votes show up because of this, then I'm glad those 1,600 people voted, as opposed to saying, "You know what? You don't deserve to vote."
It's not you don't deserve to vote. You should, exercising your franchise should take some effort. And at this stage,
why should it take more effort?
Interest in the topics. And if we don't have somebody who's interested enough in the city election
to bother voting.
No, they weren't voting. They demonstrated leaving the ballot sitting on their table or their chair or their dining room that they weren't that interested. And now you got people knocking on the door to say, "I want to help you get your ballot. Oh, what's my opinion? Let me help you fill out that ballot."
Well, gentlemen, how does early voting potentially change that? We're seeing so much more early voting. Andre, in this case, if someone has weeks ahead of time, does that take away the specter of voter fraud? Does it take away some of the specter of what Hugh's talking about, if someone has a few weeks to turn it in?
No, absolutely. It does, but it also means that you are going to have that ballot sitting in your mail pile. And I know, and my wife will tell you, I have a large mail pile sitting at any one time. And I fish out for the ballot, but not everybody is. And people have all kinds of things going on in their lives. And yes, this happens in Tempe, but it happens on the Navajo Reservation. It happens all kinds of other places where it's a lot harder to vote. Our goal should be to make it as easy as possible for as many people to vote, because everybody gets to say whether or not we deem them to be interested enough or not.
Two quick points. I attended on the Navajo Nation dozens of meetings at which people brought their ballots and they themselves completed them and turned them in. Those were all activities run by the Democratic Party. Brilliantly done, and a fairly safe issue. But secondly, how is it that we can talk about the fact that dark money is impacting our elections and massive numbers of mailers are coming to households to taint people's impression of the issues with complete nonsense, and then hope that people who are completely influenced by that at best are then going to fill out their ballot, not because they wanted to, but because somebody finally knocked on their door and said, "Let me help you."
Boy, a lot of knocking there. And for our final topic for the last few minutes, Andre, let me start with you on this. An agreement now has been reached between Maricopa County and the Diamondbacks to give the Diamondbacks the chance to look for another place to play. Yeah. What are your thoughts about that? Is this one of those things? One of the phrases that hit me is, this is more likely to keep the Diamondbacks in Arizona. Was there a risk? Are there other markets clamoring for baseball?
Certainly not. I don't think there's any real risk the Diamondbacks would be leaving Arizona. And to bring things full circle, this gets back to this dark money issue, and it gets back to the influence of powerful interests in our politics. Whether the county supervisor should have voted this way or not when it came to letting the Diamondbacks out of the agreement earlier is one set of issues. But speaking in a larger sense, we as Maricopa County, and speaking for myself as a Phoenix resident, have put so much money into downtown Phoenix and have invested so much, and those resources could be spent on schools. They could be spent on neighborhoods. Those are the things that make a city great, And I think it's a chance to take a step back and say, how are we spending our dollars? Where are we investing our dollars? And whose pocket is that ending up in?
A couple of $100 million in taxpayer money for a stadium that's not even quite 22 years old. I appreciate the Diamondbacks and what they've done, but let's be clear, it's a business. They're going to make a business decision. I do think of anybody I would trust, it's Derek Hall in the position running the team. The ownership group has very different interests, but I think Derek really is intending to make sure that they make the best choice they can, not just for the team, but weigh into that conversation. What is good for this valley? It would be a shame for the city of Phoenix to lose that. We also spent $1.2 billion to put in light rail and connect that stadium to everything else, and that would not have been done but for that stadium. It would have been placed elsewhere to help those neighborhoods and help communities and schools rather than a sports complex. But ultimately, I'm grateful that Derek Hall is there because I think we'll get a better decision.
All right, so quickly, guys, I want to ask each of you, ultimately, do you think the Diamondbacks stay at Chase Field? Do you think they go somewhere else in the valley, Hugh?
I think ultimately they have a great shot at staying at Chase Field, but we're going to have to come up with a way to fund the additional improvements for that. Otherwise, they're going to go someplace where another city or a county or another Native American community says, here's $400 million, let's build a new building.
What do you think, Andre?
And if they make that decision, God bless them. It's a free country. I'm a believer in free market economics, just like Hugh is. And as opposed to putting more money into a stadium in downtown Phoenix, I'd love to have that money be going to our schools, going to libraries, going to parks. That's what's going to make Phoenix and Tempe and all these other places great cities to live in.
Andre Cherney is former chair of the Arizona Democratic Party. Hugh Holman, former mayor of Tempe and really good at knocking. Hugh, thanks so much. Andre, thanks. You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at the show@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.